Great. So we are now in recording mode, and we are going to just dive into this webinar. So welcome to our Body and Soul series. This is the first one of 2014. We host four of them per year with guest experts on different women's health issues. And again, we like to do this as just a more interactive way to actually talk about this issue and be able to give Women's Voices for the Earth members a more in-depth look at maybe some issues that Women's Voices for the Earth doesn't necessarily cover in our work, for example, but still relate to women's health, for example, tonight. And so I would like to go ahead and tell you a little bit about Women's Voices for the Earth for those of you who might be newer to our organization. And thank you so much for being part of it. So we work on amplifying women's voices to eliminate toxic chemicals. And we run campaigns in fragrance, in cleaning products, cosmetics and personal care products, salon products. So that's really focused on women who are working in salons. And our newest and quite possibly our favorite campaign on feminine care products. Toxic chemicals in pads, tampons, washes, wipes, douches, for example, some of those. And so how do we get rid of toxic chemicals? We really look at this as, how do we do this systemically? We don't believe that, you know, only people who can afford seventh generation products should get access to those products, you know. For example, women living on the High Line in Montana are not going to have access to seventh generation products. We believe that all women, no matter where they live, deserve healthy products and healthy communities. And so we come at this really systemically. So we educate and we engage women to give them resources on how to reduce their exposure to toxic chemicals and to give them avenues into becoming involved in our campaigns. And so that's one thing that we're doing tonight. We work on changing corporate practices. So we work with companies on reformulating their products. Last year, we convinced Procter & Gamble, which is the biggest consumer product company on the planet, to take 1,4-dioxane out of Tide detergent, which is linked to cancer. We convinced Simple Green to take out a chemical linked to fertility problems and low birth weight. We convinced Procter & Gamble also to take out phthalates and triclosan. So we work with companies on reformulating their products, on all of these mainstream products, too, so that women who may not even know anything about this issue are still getting access to safe products, because, again, we believe that everybody should. And then we also work to influence state and federal policies to say that toxic chemicals shouldn't be in these products in the first place. There are so many people out there who believe that government, some federal agency, somebody is out there making sure that products that we pull off the shelf are safe, and it's just not true, and it's horrifying. But that's what we are working to change, and we have made a lot of headway over the past couple of years in this arena. And you can find a lot more information on all of these things that I'm just breezing through on our website. So please take a look at our website at womensvoices.org if you would like to learn more. And really briefly, why an organization focused on women when it comes to toxic chemicals? Why aren't we talking about men? Well, one of the biggest reasons is that women have actually been historically overlooked in this movement. The exposure routes to women and young girls have been historically overlooked. One example of this is that out of the 80,000 plus toxic chemicals that are out there on the marketplace in the U.S., only about 200 of them have ever been adequately tested for safety by the EPA. And of those, they're tested for their short-term impacts to men in occupational exposure settings. And so things that are unique to women, like a lot of the things on this slide, are absolutely overlooked. I mean, we're talking about links to breast cancer, which develops over years, right? Links to fertility problems. A lot of this has never been looked at. And the reason that we need to be looking at it, one, we are greater users of products that can tend to contain toxic chemicals. Personal care products, obviously. The average woman uses about 9 to 15 personal care products a day, whereas the average man uses about 5 to 9. For example, fragrance. Fragrance products are so heavily marketed to women that it's almost impossible to find a product that's not fragrance these days. And fragrance, it affects women by sensitizing us at an earlier stage in our lives to fragrance allergens. Studies show that we are actually more susceptible to fragrance at certain stages in our menstrual cycles, which is absolutely wild. Cleaning products. Even though gender roles have changed over time, women are still doing more than 70% of the housework in the average home. And so we need to be looking at toxic chemicals in consumer products, those chemicals that we're coming into contact with every day on a daily basis. biologically, unfortunately, women just have a higher percentage of fat tissue than men do, and certain toxic chemicals that we tend to be concerned about build up in fat. Occupational exposures, for example, women who work in the nation's salons are exposed to a toxic soup of chemicals every day for long hours at a time. Women who clean for a living, for example. Massage therapists are more likely to experience fragrance allergies on their skin. So there are a lot of occupational exposures that we need to be talking about that just aren't receiving the attention that they deserve. And of course, we can pass chemicals on to our children through the womb and through breastfeeding. You know, studies have shown that if the average woman's breast milk were bottled for sale, it actually wouldn't pass FDA regulations because of the amount of synthetic chemicals. And, of course, breastfeeding is still the best way to build infant immunity, but that amount of chemicals just poses this absolutely unacceptable burden on the developing child. And to leave you with a little bit of inspiration after sort of all of those kind of depressing facts, Women's Voices for the Earth was really born out of this idea that we can change this. Women have this immense amount of social power. Studies show that women are so much more likely to make behavioral changes as part of a group, and that is movement building and action. Politically, more women vote in this country, and more women vote more often in this country than men do, and that means that our elected officials have a big responsibility to listen to us. And economically, women make more than 80% of consumer decisions in the average home, and that is a massive amount of economic power, and that is how we are able to convince massive companies like Procter & Gamble to take toxic chemicals out, because they see what you're buying and they watch it. So we have a ton of power to make change in this arena. And again, if you would like to learn more, please go to our website at womensvoices.org. And I am going to stop talking and hand it over to our guest expert for the evening, Britta Blodorn, who is a clinical herbalist. And as I mentioned, we're also lucky to have her on the Women's Voices for the Earth staff as our program associate. So, Britta, please take it away.
Thank you, Cassidy. Hello, everyone. The topic for this evening's webinar is herbal medicine, an integrative healthcare approach, and my name is Britta Blodorn. Thank you, Cassidy. Thank you, Women's Voices for the Earth, for hosting this webinar for all of us this evening. And to start off with, every class and presentation, lecture, or webinar is different. But to let you know a little about what to expect with this webinar, I have about 30 minutes of a very condensed presentation prepared for you, with about 20 minutes worth of question-answer time in the end. So I very much welcome questions and discussion, as this is where most of the learning happens for all of us. But I'd encourage all of you to try to save your questions for the second half when we can spend time exploring what comes up for all of us. So thank you for coming, and I'm honored to be here with you this evening. So let's get started with an herbal medicine approach to holistic integrative health. My name is Britta Blodorn. I'm a clinical herbalist in private practice based here in Missoula, Montana, and I consult and work with clients meeting their health needs both in person, and I'm also available for distance consultation as well. When I introduce myself and my work, it doesn't seem to fit super neatly into a predefined category or job description, but I'm proud to introduce myself as a Western herbal medicine practitioner, a healthcare provider, a public healthcare practitioner and advocate, and educator and teacher. Oh, and did I mention medicine maker too? Yes, I do that too. I've been trained and I practice in a Western model of herbal medicine, and originally or first studied with Michael Moore at the Southwest School of Botanical Medicine in Arizona, with Adam Steller at the Pacific School of Herbal Medicine in California, and with various other respected herbalists throughout the years, and I also trained and apprenticed as a home birth midwife and women's health practitioner in the Bay Area in California, actually. I've also studied physiology, anatomy, nutrition, and various biological and natural sciences as they relate to my work as an herbalist. I've been studying and practicing herbal medicine for about 15 years and currently maintain a private consulting practice, where I offer consultation, personal formulas of botanical medicines that I custom prepare for my clients from my own apothecary, and I also offer educational services. I teach classes and give lectures and do private instruction as well. So, herbal medicine and women's health, an integrative healthcare approach. Why did we choose this topic? Well, I think it's difficult to give any aspect of medicine or health approach enough justice in less than a one-hour talk. But I thought that this particular community and Women's Voices for the Earth membership would be quite interested in sharing an introduction to Western herbalism as a holistic healthcare discipline with a focus on women's health issues. So here we go. I will frame our discussion to give space for a general introduction to herbal medicine practice, and then also dive a little bit more deeper into how this may apply to some of us personally. Why a women's health topic? Well, women's health encompasses a wide field of care. It commonly refers to health issues specific to the female biology, whether those are about biologically female sexual or reproductive experiences, about concerns more so experienced by women socially or environmentally, gender-specific problems faced in health, or other conditions related to hormones that are specifically to females. Yes, we'll be talking about hormones. So it's broad yet unique, and even though this discussion is geared towards women's health concerns, the approach I'll be talking about is just as helpful and interesting to other aspects of health in general as well. Let me begin by just crediting herbal medicine as the most ancient form of medicine and healing, traditionally practiced as long as humankind and still part of primary care in the majority of the world today. People have always relied on plants as food, fiber, and medicine, and really not much has changed there as far as I'm concerned. But also contemporary herbal medicine we know of in modern society now is scientifically studied and validated in the Western sciences, particularly in physiology, chemistry, pharmacology, and the medical sciences. There are many different traditions, styles, and approaches in herbal medicine, yet how I practice and apply herbalism in a holistic model, taking a constitutional approach based in Western anatomy and physiology, is how I will be framing our discussion this evening. So as a holistic practitioner, I am interested in viewing the body and person as a whole, and not treating, there's little parentheses now, not treating illness and disease, but working with people. So what that means is that in a holistic approach, I am interested not just in a single symptom, specific illness or problem, but in everything that may contribute to that very symptom. What is going on physically, emotionally, what your diet is, your sleep pattern, what about your other systems and organ health. It's always about the whole, looking at a person as a whole system, whole organism, and no one health issue is isolated from whole body health. It's all interconnected. The constitutional approach that I take looks at how different organs and body systems interact with each other. It's all about balance. Reaching balance, regaining balance. So some organs might be deficient, others might be excessive in function and times. And in a constitutional approach of health, we try to support and enhance organ system function, which might be deficient, in order to help the person reach balance and sustained health again. Herbal medicine, as I see it, is a kind of integrative care. That's what I meant to say, which is some of my approach, which means it can be integrated into other healthcare modalities as well. It can stand alone. It does not have to stand alone. It's not superior or inferior in any way. It's one of the useful healthcare approaches available to us, and it can also be very complementary to other forms of healthcare as well. I just need to say what's not in my book is alternative. Herbal medicine is not alternative medicine to me. I don't believe in that term. I really dislike the term alternative medicine because really, like, alternative to what? Herbal medicine has been around for thousands and thousands of years, and all modern drugs and pharmaceuticals at some point have been derived from what we know about medicinal plants. So who gets to say. But what does this mean for our topic of herbal medicine and women's health this evening? So how do we generally approach any of these female-specific health concerns, women's health, with herbal medicine in particular? I'll be talking with some generalizations. Everyone is different, of course, but there are general approaches that can be used to address common symptoms. And this talk will not allow me to go into too much depth. I'm keeping it pretty general. Here is where I like to say that I always recommend to my clients and to you in this situation to always consult with your healthcare and or medical providers. I'm not able to give medical advice to diagnose, treat, or prescribe as an educator and herbalist, and I don't want to. I'm a health educator. I want to help my clients and students make educated decisions about their health using herbal medicine if they choose to. So as I said, though, there are general approaches to health problems, and these, for example, commonly include offering symptomatic as well as organ system deeper support. This is where the constitutional approach comes in. Also, we look at enhancing the body's innate healing capacities, as yes, we do believe that the body indeed heals itself and that we have most everything we need to sustain whole health, yet sometimes we might need little help and nudging to do the right thing. And again, one of the foundations of holistic medicine is getting to the root of things, trying to understand the cause of problems in order to reach long-term sustained health or regain it, instead of just offering symptomatic relief. But both is possible depending on the approach that a practitioner or client herself takes. So I'm going to talk about a few very common concerns and general issues that women experience and often want to consult about. Okay, this list looks intimidating, but it does not have to be. Let's look at this very broad list of common female-specific health concerns, many of which we commonly consult about in healthcare. Many of these are familiar to some of us, too. Yes, many of these can be addressed successfully by herbal medicine. I have seen good results with herbal healing for many of these issues. And I'm thinking maybe that is because as herbalists or holistic practitioners, we look at the whole body as one organism. And we know that not one health condition is isolated from the rest of the body, so that we can address these concerns within a bigger picture of a person's health. Again, including their personal health history, their diet and lifestyle, their unique physiology, family history, also their physical, emotional, spiritual, and environmental health factors. Any or all of them contribute or are all affected by issues such as intensely painful menstruation, for example. So looking at this list, it's not comprehensive, but it gives an idea of the number and common types of female-specific health concerns we often work with. I broadly grouped them a little bit. So to let you know that we will go into a little more in-depth about the three general areas of first menstrual irregularities. Yeah, broad, I know, but it's a grouping here. Menstrual irregularities, premenstrual syndrome, and we'll also talk about menopause challenges and herbal medicine as well. There you go. But before I do, this handout in front of you, and you'll see a link where you can download this for yourself and probably have a much better view. But this is one of my most favorite reminder handouts from Herb School. I'd like to share this briefly. It's about the metabolic effects of the female reproductive cycle. I know sometimes people blame hormones for not feeling well or have some negative connotation about them. Like, sure you've heard people say how they're feeling hormonal or something like that. Well, generally, I've heard this, you know, feeling hormonal said during someone's uncomfortable PMS period or during pregnancy or during times where they might feel especially emotional about something. Feeling hormonal. Well, hormones are a beautiful thing, really. They tell us so much. It's so important to have an understanding of how our hormones all interact with each other and to understand these patterns, to also understand when we stray too far. One thing affects the other. It always does. Knowing that the various hormones all interact and cycle with each other during a woman's life, a woman's cycle, monthly cycle, we can address from a holistic perspective various conditions by looking at how some of these may have gotten out of sync potentially. Because, of course, these hormones are not just present or active in one place in the body. Like estrogen, for example, it's made in the uterus, it's also made in other parts of the body, it's present in bones, it affects liver metabolism, bone structure, as well as immune function. So it is not just simply a sexual hormone of sorts. The advantage, how I see it, the advantage of the female cycle is that all these various hormone levels vary in sync with each other. By looking at a picture such as this one, we get to appreciate that interconnectedness of the female endocrine system and whole body health. The hormonal cycle is unique to the female physiology and whole body health, and really is a beautiful, it's a wonderful window of opportunity. It tells us so much. It's reflective, it's indicative, and informative about what else is going on in the rest of the body. And this then allows us to understand how we may be able to help shift hormonal function to help balance other health conditions as well. And this happens every month. So with that in mind, let's look at a couple of common women's health concerns and how we may approach them in a holistic care model using herbal medicine. Let's start with the menstrual irregularities. Again, this is broad, but we'll dive in just a little more. It's a broad category, I know. These are about, well, menstrual irregularities. These are about the type and length of the menses and cycles we typically have. Are we missing periods without being pregnant? Are they abnormally painful? Do we generally have longer cycles or shorter ones? Are they closer together? Does it matter? These irregularities do not usually stand alone. They commonly go along with other health concerns, and that's what makes us look at them closer. For example, does the estrogen or progesterone phase of the cycle dominate? We generally want to see a fairly balanced cycle around 28 or so days, or whatever is normal for that person once established. We always ask, what might be the causes? For example, it's common for young athletes who, let's say, overexercise or are on restricted diets of sorts to either start their periods real late or stop menstruating. Or for some people, they may have trouble digesting and assimilating dietary fats. Their liver may have a harder time processing fats and chemicals and is therefore not breaking down these hormones as efficiently as it should or could. Maybe causing much more painful menses or PMS than necessary. These are just some examples. When I work with someone with pronounced menstrual irregularities, here are some of the common approaches I might look at. Diet. Always diet. Diet is so important. Are you getting all the nutrients you need? Are there ways you can add additional nutrients? Nutritional support to help your liver process hormones, or are there food sensitivities that may contribute to the imbalanced hormonal system? It's all interconnected, and diet is always key. That's where we start. That's ultimately what it's all about. But herbally, I may look into ways to support one's hormones, hormonal household, let's say. Maybe help balance if there is a pronounced dominance, excess deficiency on either end of the cycle. I need to say, though, that herbs do not contain human hormones. Herbs are plants. We are humans. We do not share the same hormones. They do not have or supply estrogen, progesterone, oxytocin, or any other hormone to our bodies. Yet, some may help teach our body to make more, to utilize more or less, or at least fool us into thinking that there are more hormones available, therefore causing physical reactions. And that's where the beauty comes in. with these herbal medicines. Some common botanicals to consider for hormonal balancing include herbs such as Vitex, Angelica sinensis, Simisi fusa, or the lesser-known Gossypium. And I'm using Latin names here because they are universal, but we can chat more later and maybe I'll start weaving in some of the common names as well. Some emmenagogues that are interesting to look at with menstrual irregularities include herbs such as zingiber, asarum, hedioma, or mensa. Emmenagogues are interesting because they help increase blood flow to the organs, let's say to the uterus, literally trying to make us sweat. And they may help bring on a late menses, excuse me, or support good flow during menstruation. Also antispasmodics. This is another helpful, very helpful category of herbs if we do group them. Those help relax the smooth muscles, such as the uterus or maybe even the fallopian tube sometimes. They work by inhibiting excessive inflammatory mediators. Some common ones used are the viburnums and Dioscorea. So the viburnums are black haw or cranbark, and Dioscorea is wild yam. These are just some examples. Okay, premenstrual symptoms. Let's talk for a few minutes about PMS, this broad category of female cycle, of the female cycle, depending issues that occur for some just prior to begin of their first day of their menstruation. Some common PMS symptoms that people complain about include mood, sometimes extreme mood imbalances, and heightened inflammation. Those result in aches and pains, and sometimes intense and uncomfortable bouts of emotions, not generally a good sense. Again, what might be some of its causes here? This is what we always trying to go after. So, again, what we will do is we will look at what the hormonal regulation is doing. Is there a real short or is there a real long estrogen cycle? Is our liver keeping up with the breaking down of the extra hormones? Is it handling lipids okay? Or is it overtaxed, either dietarily, inherently, or by having too much to do? We may look at how to support stress management or offer other essential nervous system support, and also offer liver support, because especially during the days leading up to menstruation, with that heightened progesterone and another estrogen surge happening as well, when the liver is already doing so much, sometimes it can use a little bit of help to help break down those extra hormones, you know, depending. So the picture you're looking at here is actually taraxacum. That's dandelion. It's one of the common weeds and medicinal plants used just for that reason, helping the liver break down extra hormones. It's a bitter. But here are some other common herbs used to help women deal with uncomfortable PMS symptoms. Some to use for acute treatment, some for more long-term sustained changes, some for, you know, symptomatic treatment. We, again, similar approach. We look at herbs that may offer endocrine, hormonal support, such as Vitex, Angelica, or Leonoris, motherwort. We want to look at the group of nervines to offer central nervous system support, dealing with stress and sleep and moodiness, we may call it. Some common ones in that group, in that category, are Avena or Hypericum, Scutellaria, Verbena, and Passiflora. Some herbs that help offer liver support and also essential fatty acids include, well, the liver supportive ones include Taraxacum, that's dandelion, and Arcticum, burdock. And yet, there are so many more. These are just two very common ones, and easily accessible as well. Essential fatty acids, some extra ones we may gain from flaxseed, cold pressed flaxseed oil, or evening primrose oil as well. Again, plant-based oils. This one. Okay, just a breather here. This slide is to appreciate the beauty of some of our nervines. This is Verbena hastata on the left, blue vervain, and Passiflora incarnata, passion flower, on the right. Both of these herbs are often used to help soothe, support, or strengthen nervous system function. They can be helpful when dealing with stress or sleep issues, for example, and herbs such as these to support the nervous system are often important when dealing with women's health issues such as PMS or during the perimenopausal or menopausal times as well, and they're beautiful. So let's look at some issues related to menopause now. Here we're looking at two pictures of flowering Tsimishi fuga, black cohosh, on the left, and Vitex chaste tree on the right, two common herbs used when dealing with a number of peri- or menopausal health concerns. And some of the common symptoms people may struggle with during menopause or perimenopause may include hot flushes or sweats, emotional challenges, sometimes depression, fatigue, insomnia, energy issues. That's common for women. Some of the common botanical or holistic medicine approaches we may take are helping to assist the body to adjust to new hormone levels, providing nervous system support, and also helping to decrease the intensity of symptoms. A symptomatic approach has its place, absolutely. So some common herbs to consider in this category here for endocrine support. Again, looking at Angelica. Well, we're looking at Vitex again, and Angelica. Angelica's Dong Quai, Vitex Chaste Tree, Tsimishi Fuga's Black Cohosh, Leonoris is Motherwort. There's actually a Leonoris, a Motherwort, on the left. It's a little mint. Some nervines or botanicals that offer central nervous system support include Avena or Eleutherococcus, one of my favorites, Verbena, Hypericum, Passiflora, and there's so many others. These are just good, common ones that I personally really like. Well, again, we can offer support to the liver function with herbs such as dandelion, taraxacum, and there are also botanicals available for symptom management such as helping to decrease hot flashes or sweats with the example of salvia. That's sage, white sage, or kitchen sage would work as well. Now, this slide. Here's a slide that we might not have time to talk about this evening. I might like to skip it for now and see if some of these thoughts come back during our discussion time later. Here I listed a number of other female-specific sexual or reproductive health concerns that come up, and maybe we'll have time to pick one or two of these and also take a holistic approach and talk about some potential herbs that might be helpful in this arena. But let me skip through this right now to this slide. This slide as well, I might save this for later. I decided to go into a little bit more depth about three of the most commonly used herbs in women's health, including Vitex, Chaste Tree Berry, Angelica Sinensis, Dong Quai, and Tsimishi Fuga, Black Cohosh. So I'm not diving into them quite yet. I'm going to see what our time is doing. I want to make sure there's time for questions and answers, and I just want to talk about some herbal medicines in general as well. How do we use some of these herbs we have mentioned or others for ourselves? In self-care or in clinical usage. There's a wide variety of herbal medicine preparations available and possible. Some are more appropriate, some are more active than others, depending on the specific plant medicine, what we're trying to get out of it. The most basic and important of all is food, plants and medicinal plants as food source. We evolved on wild foods, on wild plants that are not just nutritious, but also medicinal. So even though we don't live that lifestyle so much anymore, but how we feed ourselves still is key to health and healing. We still have those same needs physiologically. Now we commonly use medicinal plants as spices. Think pepper or turmeric, cumin, garlic, and so on. Herbs are also used in powder, capsule, or pill form. Sometimes this can be the preferred delivery method. Sometimes they lose their potency in this form. There's quality issues for sure. It just depends. Of course, we use herbs in infusion form as teas or as decoctions. Those are concentrated type of teas. Some active constituents of medicinal plants are only or mostly water soluble, so we have to we have to make infusions and teas. Others, for example, with higher oil contents are water soluble at all, so other extraction methods work better. And then there's the oils and the salves. Those are mostly for external use, though. I prepare most of the herbal medicine used in my practice myself, and I also teach classes on beginning herbal medicine making, and this is always a very popular and fun topic for people. It's very fun to make your own medicine.
Hey, Britta, let's make sure we have enough time for questions here.
Yeah.
I think we're almost done anyway, so that's perfect.
Yeah, there's just two more. Right, thank you. So, herbs are also used in liquid extract form. Those liquid extracts I work mostly with in my practice, where I stock a comprehensive apothecary from which I can custom formulate for my clients. Tinctures are liquid extracts of medicinal plants. We use a menstruum, generally a fairly high percentage of alcoholic solvent, to extract the medicinally active chemical principles of medicinal plants. They're either extracted from the root, herb, whole plant, seed, or other plant part, whichever contains the medicinal properties we're interested in. Fluid extracts are more condensed and potent, appropriate for some herbs, not for others. There's a wide spectrum of tinctures and fluid extracts available. Different preparation methods are more appropriate for some herbs or for some people or health conditions than others. Liniments are tinctures that are used externally, commonly for sprains and the like. And then there's vinegars, which are non-alcoholic, where we use vinegar as a solvent, and there's other solvents available as well. But this was just to give you an idea of the broad spectrum available to us. It always depends, and it is just a snapshot. So, wrapping it up, how and where can you learn more about herbal medicine choices available to you? First of all, I'd like to encourage you all to study and get to know the medicinal plants bioregional to you. It's a nice part of herbalism as a healing art is for us to connect or reconnect with the natural world, have direct relationships with people, providers, as well as with plants in our environment. And you may like to learn how to prepare some of your own medicines and remedies, what medicine your own environment, your own backyard holds for you, or just gain a deeper appreciation of where all medicine, as we know it, originally was derived from. So also to do reach out to people with knowledge of medicinal plants. Find teachers, herbalists, or providers that may be able to help you. Some of the health practitioners that commonly use herbal medicine as part of their practice include Western clinical herbalists, traditional and community herbalists, Chinese herbalists and acupuncturists, Ayurvedic health practitioners, naturopathic physicians, and also other integrative medical or health providers. So I know we are breathing through this, but please, here's my contact information I like to share with you. Please do reach out and contact me anytime. I am available for consultation, also distance consultation, and of course in person for education, talks, and classes, and would be happy to help you with your questions and concerns and by offering resources to you really anytime. I would love to hear from you. You can contact me in person by phone, by email, also through my website or Facebook page. Please do.
Great. Thank you so much, Britta. That was wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us this evening. It's been a pleasure. And now I look forward to hearing from some of you. Are there questions?
Yeah, let me unmute all of your lines. One sec here.
The conference has been unmuted.
Great, and I am going to start with this question from Patty. Thank you for chatting that in. I'm 53, and I am postmenopausal, often have hot flashes. Is black cohosh the best herb for me? Does it interact with any prescription meds? What's the recommended dosage?
These are very, what is it, Patty? Was it Patty? Yes, mm-hmm. Hello, Patty.
Yes.
These are very specific questions to your individual health situation. If you were my client or were to consult with someone in an herbalist practice, I would be asking you a lot more questions about your health. For example, what other medications are you taking? what other health concerns are you facing currently? Because, yes, herbs are active, chemically active. So any medication is going to have a reaction with one or the other. So even if you were telling me you are not currently on any other medication, I would not be able to tell you what the dosage for black cohosh in your situation is without, you know, doing an intake and understanding what your situation is. Black cohosh might be a good choice for you, and it's generally safe in a low dosage on your own. I made so, but I generally encourage people to consult simply because, yeah, I'm sorry. Does that help at all? I didn't want to go too far off on a tangent here. Does that help at all? I cannot give a very specific answer to this question because so many factors are important to consider in this. Black cohosh might be a good choice for you, though.
And you can always give Britta a call and talk more in depth about it.
Thank you.
Who else has a question for Britta?
Oh, maybe I can.
Hey, Britt, I have a question. This is Annie City. Hi, how are you?
Hey, Annie. Well?
So, I'm generally a healthy girl. I'm almost 30. I'm recently, you know, have been learning about the whole non-toxic living, green living, trying as much as I can to incorporate that in my house. Are there any herbs, you know, I know that there are things that, you know, are environmental that we're constantly exposed to and there's nothing we can do about that, but for someone who's generally healthy, is there any herbs you recommend that they can take as kind of like an herbal supplement rather than vitamins that I can get from my local grocery store? I'm looking for something very basic that is good for the average woman.
You're looking for just general support. Like an all-around, like a multivitamin herbal, basically, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. Go get yourself some nettle. I'm serious. Nettle is that one herb that all of us, I mean, maybe I shouldn't make such a generalization, but most all of us can benefit from. Nettle provides nettle tea, so this is not tincture form, this is not capsule or tablet, simply nettle tea. You can buy it in bulk. It's much better quality than the little tea bags they sell. It's inexpensive. And also grows in, like, most of North America as well. Nettle is very, very high in iron, calcium, protein, magnesium, some other minerals as well. And some of these, some of these minerals we often find ourselves being depleted or deficient in living the modern lifestyle that we do or the, you know, food sources that are available to us. So if there was one herb that I could just, you know, recommend to you right now, it would be nettle. We could all benefit from, you know, drinking nettle tea on a regular basis.
If you do it.
But do that.
Perfect. Great. Thank you.
Good. Thanks.
Anne just chatted in such a good question. Britta, can you speak to an herbal medicine approach for helping prevent our bodies from becoming vulnerable to toxins and or developing cancer?
Yes, let's do that. Thinking about an herbal medicine approach to helping prevent our bodies from becoming vulnerable to toxins. Now, this is where, again, in a constitutional and holistic approach, we might want to look at what makes us as individuals more susceptible to certain illnesses, what makes us more vulnerable than, you know, our neighbor or mother, the person next to us. But, yes, generally there are herbs such as, you know, dandelion or burdock, I mentioned earlier, maybe even milk thistle. There's yellow bitters such as Oregon grape and herbs that help stimulate liver function that, not for all of us, but for some of us, help process toxins better as we, you know, process them physiologically ourselves. There's always dietary and nutritional approaches. You know, I just mentioned nettles. There's other herbs similar to it, like nettle and wild oats and red clover and herbs such as that that offer extra nutrition and help us buffer our blood better. So, you know, basically creating buffer zones in our health so that not as susceptible to illness. I could go on and on. I don't know how much further I could go with this. There's a lot we can do, yes. Developing cancer, I don't think that's something I can, preventing cancer that I can confidently speak to, be honest. Yeah, that's a little outside of the scope of my practice.
Anne, are you there? Did you have any follow-up questions to that?
Well, sure. And again, not to ask you to speak to anything that's a little too far outside, but you mentioned a lot about menstrual irregularities and things like that. What about for those of us who had some pretty pronounced problems like that in pre-puberty and puberty times as young people, maybe missing or no menstrual cycle or really irregular things like that? And is there anything as the years go on that we, again, should be attentive to maybe help keep ourselves more balanced when we've maybe known that we've been exposed to some things that might have made that irregular? Pesticides. That definitely was exposed to a lot of pesticides as a teenager.
Yeah, yeah. So I may take a very similar approach than I might recommend or look at if you were still experiencing those symptoms that now lay in your past. You know, this general threefold approach that we talked about earlier of providing liver support, providing central nervous system support, and balancing hormones. It's a good starting point. So even though you might not be experiencing, I'm assuming because you said it was in the past, you might not be experiencing the same menstrual irregularities anymore, you still have, over the years, there's a precedent that there was set. So your body is still reading your experience through that lens, if that makes sense. So providing some extra support to the endocrine system to support immune function in general would be a really helpful thing. Am I steering you in a helpful direction with this?
Sure. What I'm hearing is it's still good to do anything that's positive nutritionally or verbally that's supportive of those things.
Well, yes, you said that much better than I did. Yes.
Thank you.
Great. Who else has a question? And if you're shy, you can chat them in.
If you're shy, you can chat them in. You can contact us later. Do not hesitate.
Nobody out there has any questions or wants to discuss anything further, a little clarification on anything?
I have a question.
Yeah.
What's your take on herbs and pregnancy? Like, is it safe to are there, like, any specific herbs to stay away from that could be dangerous, or just in general?
Yeah, this is a really general question, isn't it? What is my take on herbs? So, yes, there are definitely herbs that are safe and can be recommended and super helpful in pregnancy, and there are also herbs to stay away from. And both of those lists are fairly lengthy. So you might, if you have specific questions about something for your situation or someone you might be working or with, you know, contact me and I can guide you to some resources as well. But, yeah, just like other medications as well, everything gets metabolized just a little bit differently during pregnancy and gets passed through to the fetus as well. So we are more careful of what we ingest and consume, and there is impact, of course, as well. So, yes, there's many safe herbs, and then there's many that we do want to stay away from. Mm-hmm. And it's more than just a couple. I shouldn't start down that list right now.
Great. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Britta, Rachel is asking where you can find that infographic on hormones that you had up early on in the presentation.
Oh, yes, the handout. Did the link not work? I'm sorry about that.
It's like it says...
So that handout is found on the website of the Southwest School of Botanical Medicine. That was Michael Moore's school. Southwest School of Botanical Medicine. If you type that into Google, you will find it because I know the email address is rather long and odd. So... I want to read that out. And from there will be a link to handouts, to class handouts, and also to brochures and things like that. And I do not have the website open right now in front of me, or I would tell you exactly what the link is called. But there's a link to handouts, and amongst there will be a, I think it's a PDF file about the female reproductive cycle and metabolic effects. But if you cannot find that, shoot me an email and I'll send you over the link, okay? So that is a really nice handout.
Great. So I know that we've hit 7 o'clock, and I just want to see if there are any last questions out there. And if you did not, just like Britta said, if you didn't have a chance to ask your question, please feel free to shoot her an email or find her on Facebook or on her website. And thank you so much, Britta, for sharing all of your expertise with us tonight. That was fantastic.
That was fun. Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, and thanks to all of you for spending your Wednesday evening with us. We will talk with you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. This has been so helpful.
Good.
Oh, happy to hear it. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.